You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. If there is a debate tonight, what do you want to hear the candidates discuss and what would be decisive in your mind? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. You get to ask the debaters a question on our website, mytake@thetakeaway.org. This Sunday, some pastors across the United States are going to step into the pulpit and intentionally break the law. That's the idea, anyway. They'll be preaching sermons that tell parishioners explicitly who to vote for. This is a challenge, in theory at least, to federal tax law. Churches, like other nonprofit organizations, have tax exemptions that come with this hitch. They cannot have any direct involvement in political campaigns. Now, it could be a temptation for many religious leaders during this historical election year to actually make this challenge, but we've invited two pastors onto the program to talk about what's at risk here. Pastor Gus Booth, War Road Community Church in War Road, Minnesota. Pastor, your intention is to challenge that law this Sunday, correct?
That is correct.
And also joining us is the Reverend Eric Williams, senior pastor of North Congregational United Church of Christ in Columbus, Ohio. Reverend Williams, what are you going to do on Sunday?
Well, I'm going to listen with interest. Last Sunday, I spoke in favor of separation of church and state.
So you will not be explicitly endorsing a candidate on Sunday?
I have never endorsed and never will endorse a candidate as a minister.
Pastor Booth, what is the idea in the challenge that you're going to make, and can you tell us who you'll be endorsing?
Yeah, the idea in the challenge is simply that the IRS has made a law that is in competition with freedom of speech, and I guess I just don't feel like my freedom of speech is infringed upon when I step behind the pulpit, or shouldn't be. And so that's the genesis or the crux of the situation, and I'm going to endorse John McCain.
Do you feel as though you're crossing the Rubicon in some sense? Any nerves about getting up there? I know pastors aren't typically known for being nervous before sermons.
No, not really, I guess. There'll be some media there, which is be a little unusual for us, but you know, the bottom line is the gospel needs to be preached into all areas of life, and politics is one of those areas.
Reverend Williams, what's wrong with endorsing a candidate? Certainly, God is something that is very much discussed in the political campaign. We heard a lot about it all this year.
Well, I think it's marvelous that we include God in our discussion about politics, but it's not a matter of free speech. It's a matter of using tax dollars to endorse a candidate. Reverend Booth certainly has the freedom to talk about a candidate outside of his role as a minister, and that doesn't violate the law. But when you use tax dollars to endorse a candidate, tax-free dollars, that is breaking the law. And more than that, I'm sure Reverend Booth can talk about any of the issues that the voters are concerned about and still not endorse a candidate. So he, in fact, is free to raise up all the major issues, inspire, equip, encourage his members, apart from telling them who to vote for.
So, Pastor Booth, pay your taxes and you can endorse whoever you want.
Well, churches are by nature not taxable. We don't have to have a 501c3 in order to not be taxable. We have never been taxed in the history of our nation. And so, and also the IRS does take issue with code words, what they say. So I can't use words like Democrat or Republican or pro-choice or, you know, pro-life or liberal or conservative because, you know, the underlying principle is that, well, the IRS is smart enough to know that we will use code words without endorsements. So they've taken issue with that as well.
Well, how smart is the IRS and the judiciary on this matter? It seems like a very interesting confluence and conflict of doctrines in the United States. And joining hold on 1 second, Pastor.
Sure.
Joining us to help sort this out, because I need a refresher course, is Marcy Hamilton, professor of law at the Benjamin Cardozo School of Law at Yeshiva University here in New York. Marcy, thanks for joining us.
Oh, happy to be here.
Can you describe the conflict between, as Pastor Booth is saying, the tax law that sets explicit conditions of behavior and speech for a tax exemption and the First Amendment right to free speech?
Well, the argument is being made that there should be no limitation on anything a pastor says because there is some notion of either an absolute or an unlimited right to free speech, but of course there is no unlimited right to free speech, and it is constitutional to set limits on tax-exempt status. What's at stake for these churches is not whether they speak or not. It's only whether or not they're going to benefit from having tax-exempt status from their income. This has nothing to do with property tax exemptions, which are state and local laws. This is all about federal income tax. And if they want the federal income tax benefit, they cannot act like a PAC. And that's really what's going on. Are they going to be a political action committee or a nonprofit?
Well, what is the chance, Marcy, and some have said the intent of this challenge is to actually make a Supreme Court case out of this where the issue would be showcased in a very, very celebrated Supreme Court case if it makes it all the way there? What's the likelihood of that, do you think?
Oh, I think this is actually being orchestrated, it's pretty clear, by the Alliance Defense Fund, which is a far-right conservative, it's the ACLU for the far-right, and they are looking for the best case, which is one of the reasons I'm sure they've asked as many pastors as possible to do this. They'll look for the best set of facts and use that to go up on these First Amendment arguments.
Except, Professor Hamilton, what I asked was not so much how it's orchestrated, and, you know, lawsuits are orchestrated by lots of institutions on all kinds of issues throughout history. The question really is, what's the likelihood, based on past Supreme Court decisions, of this making it to a challenge at the highest level?
Well, I think the fact there will be enough challenges because of the size of the civil disobedience on Sunday, that once you have that many cases, the Supreme Court can no longer not weigh in. So if you have enough cases, and certainly if you have courts ruling in different ways, and the court needs to weigh in as sort of a referee, we will see it at the Supreme Court. So I don't think there's much chance that the court will be able to avoid it. The question is twofold. One, will it get to the court? But two, there's also very active lobbying in Congress to get this rule repealed.
Okay, Marcy, let me ask Pastor Booth if that is his intent. Is your mission to convert your parishioners or guide them to a particular vote, or is it to get to the Supreme Court?
Both.
I see. And is that a fundamental change in your view of your role as a pastor?
Yeah, it is. Matter of fact, when I first became a pastor, I realized I didn't want to take political sides because I didn't want to needlessly offend the other side and then not have the ability to share the gospel with them. But then I read the platform to the Democratic, you know, their platform, and I realized it was like a how-to manual on how to sin. It was so antithetical to Scripture that I just realized I need to take leadership on this issue, and we need to take the gospel into all areas of life. And to answer the question about the tax exemption, if you are exempt, then you are somehow have to give up your freedom of speech. Political action committees are tax-exempt organizations, for goodness sake. So if they can speak about politics, why can't churches speak about politics?
Reverend Williams, what do you say to that?
Well, the tax structure is different from that, I understand. What I'm really concerned about is jeopardizing a couple of things the way Reverend Booth talks. One is it jeopardizes a freedom of conscience. I think that the voting booth is really sacred. When each person goes into that booth, each person votes his or her conscience. And if the minister has told that person how to vote, that minister has that kind of power, that kind of influence. I don't know that person is voting his or her own conscience. And the other concern I have is, while it's fine for Reverend Booth to talk about the values and the concerns of the day from his particular religious point of view, the neighbor down the street may look at life differently. But there needs to be a respect for our neighbor in this as well.
But Pastor Williams, isn't it true that parishioners can kind of figure this out, that there is a bit of a word game going on here, that everybody knows what everyone is saying there in the pulpit?
I think everybody, when a pastor is a good pastor to its member, his or her members, certainly they're going to know what the pastor thinks and feels. So find a venue to do that and not step into the pulpit and abuse that pulpit by telling the people. I mean, I've actually asked people who say, if my minister says so, then that's what I should do.
Pastor Booth, is that the way your parishioners operate? If you endorse, they'll vote for John McCain?
No, I think they'll vote for John McCain because they are biblically astute people, and most biblically astute people needs to vote for the most biblical candidate.
All right, Pastor Booth, and actually we're gonna go now, but good luck on Sunday, and I'd love to be there at coffee hour to see what the reaction is. Pastor Gus Booth of the War Road Community Church in War Road, Minnesota, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, brother.
And Reverend Eric Williams, Senior Pastor of North Congregational United Church of Christ in Columbus, Ohio. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And Marcy Hamilton, it'll be interesting to watch. Thank you for joining us.
Very entertaining.
Professor of Law at the Benjamin Cardozo School of Law at Yeshiva University.
We're always on at the Takeaway, and Election Day is less than 6 weeks away. We've got you covered. You'll find our complete coverage on our election website, vote2008.thetakeaway.org.
And here's your takeaway.
It's only a three-paragraph plan. It takes up about four-fifths of one piece of paper.
That's our man on the Hill, Capital News Connection. Todd Zwillick was the second running takeaway of this week. He's got a streak going. The plan to save the economy is no bigger than an 8x10 piece of paper.
8x10. Let us know what you're thinking about what's happening on Capitol Hill. 8778-MY-TAKE, or send us an email at mytake@thetakeaway.org. I'm Adora Udoji.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.